are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
One of the biggest challenges for us is the transient nature of our core student population and the transient nature of our teacher population. So teachers come here on a two-year contract with the possibility of a two-year reapplication, which means the longest a teacher is here for is 4 years.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Peter LeBlanc in Belgium at the NATO base. Peter is the principal of the Canadian section of the MOD Shape International School. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the nuance of education in Canada, the challenges of working in MOD schools, and mixed grade classrooms.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am with Peter LeBlanc. Peter, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everyone what you do?
Sure. My name is Peter LeBlanc. I'm the principal of the Canadian section at SHAPE, so here in Kestel, Belgium.
Okay, so for context, I'm here with Jens, the principal of the English school who I've been working with, and very unique. I don't think I've seen this ever before in my school career, where two separate organisations in many respects exist on the same school corridor. Have you come across that before in your own career?
No, this would be unique for me as well.
But, okay, so what's attracted you to this particular role?
I'd love to say it was Jens, but really it wasn't, just because I didn't. This was an added benefit. The role itself came from really looking for an educational challenge. Okay. I've been a principal. This is my fifth school, 16th year.
Okay.
And this position here, so I'm a Canadian principal, having worked in Canada before. And this position here just presented itself as a way to kind of bring, you know, both my own personal learning and skill set to a different environment. It's a unique job. Mm-hmm. The Canadian, the Department of National Defense only has three schools like this, two in the Netherlands and this one here.
Okay. Could I get you to rewind just through your teaching career and tell us a little journey of where it all started and how you've navigated throughout the 16 years?
Sure. So horse and buggy when I first started teaching. No, 28th year, I think, of teaching. So I started out teaching in the middle school grades. So that would be probably the equivalent of year 6, year 7, year 8 for you. So grade 7 and grade 8 for us. Teaching French as a second language, teaching French immersion, all subject areas. Mm-hmm. Got into administration through a vice principal of mine tapping me on the shoulder and saying, Peter, I think this would be a good fit for you. And became a vice principal or an associate head in 2004.
Okay. And this is back in Canada?
This is back in Canada, back in Ontario. So one of our provinces in Ontario. Mm-hmm. And have been both a vice principal and a principal of small schools, large schools, single language, dual language schools. I spent 2 years working at our system level. So I was in charge of leading a team that designed a registration process for French immersion, and then went back into a school for a year, and then and came here. So
great. And you, I think you mentioned 6 months when we passed on the corridor earlier.
This is my first school year here, so I started.
So what are the immediate challenges of settling in and, you know, adjusting to camp life as well as life as a principal?
Well, there's the practical part of basically picking up your life and moving overseas. So I had never lived more than within 100 kilometers of Toronto, Ontario, and this is more than that. So there was getting used to being somewhere else, away from my children, who are adult children, but it's hard. You know, they both live back home. My wife and I kind of having all the practical aspects of living elsewhere. So the products are different. All the day-to-day things are different. And then the added challenge of coming to a school that, although our school follows the Ontario curriculum, so I'm very familiar with the curriculum and program, it is quite unique since it's very small. It's intent is to support both the families of Canadian military and NATO families, but mm-hmm. we also have more. Most of our population, actually, the majority of our population, are non-Canadian students. So they're American or NATO allies whose families come here.
I've been to McGill University. That's as much as my Canadian experience goes. And I've done a tiny bit of research in, you know, the attrition and workload issues of Canadian, well, particularly Quebecan teachers. Mm-hmm. So I am very naive, but could you give everyone, and for my benefit, an insight into the challenges Canadian or Quebecan teachers or Ontario teachers face, the pressures, and how that manifests itself here particularly? Is there any similarities, or is it very different here?
Well, that's a good question. It would be hard. So I'll state this is my own personal opinion. Course, so it would be based on my, you know, my own observations, perhaps a little bit of reading in connection with others. It would be hard to talk about, I think, the challenges of the Canadian teacher, since Canada is vast and diverse. I would think workload, certainly the changing dynamic of a classroom, certainly increases in students identifying with mental health issues or...
So would these be current topics?
It would be current topics without it.
Teachers in Ontario.
Correct. Okay. That's correct, yeah.
And how does that relate to being here?
It probably doesn't directly. Our students would be unique. Not that our students are not dealing with mental health issues, but they would likely be dealing with issues that are more... and again, I say that being 6 months in the driver's seat here.
Yeah, of course.
But our students would be dealing with things like transitory nature of life, living abroad, dealing with the third culture, perhaps, the culture that their school has, the culture that home has, and then the culture of, you know, where they happen to be, which is different, you know, from perhaps their native or maternal, you know, their native culture. So we would have that issue. And the anxieties would come from the same places they do for kids. You know, had a meeting today about, you know, friendship dynamics that are occurring. You know, we would work to try and teach students in the same way we would teach them, you know, maths or science or language. We would look at, you know, trying to support them in how to develop those relationships. But we'd have that added layer as well. We have students who... you know, after 2 or 3 years, their parents may be posted somewhere else. So they're taking all those social things that would have connected them to a school and they're losing them. So how do we, as an important part of their lives, support them in building up the skill set that allows them to do that on an ongoing basis?
No, again, I'm very naive. The Canadian curriculum, walking down SHAPE particularly, and you've got British on one side, Canadian on the right. Could you describe to me what a Canadian classroom, the hallmarks, or are there no differences to what you'd see in a British classroom?
I don't see a significant amount of difference between the Canadian and British classrooms here. I mean, the British students are wearing uniforms and the Canadian students are not, so you can right away, you know, notice the visible difference. But from a programming perspective, I don't know if I would see extreme differences. I think good teaching practice is good teaching practice. We would certainly have a focus on language and math would be our two big curriculum foci, and I think that would be the same thing with the UK school. We have our UCAN promises and a focus on character education, which we share. So I think those are kind of big picture items that would be the same.
I noticed round table type layouts. Circle tables
from a physical perspective, correct, in all of our classrooms.
Is that a deliberate decision or something just here or something in Canadian rooms?
You would see it in Canadian classrooms, and again, I recognize Canada is vast. We actually have no Canadian curriculum. We have 13 different curriculums, three territories, 10 provinces. So again, talking about the Ontario experience, it wouldn't be as common, I'll say, back home as it is here. I'd love to take credit for kind of the modular furniture and the way the classes were set up, but that would be my predecessor and my predecessor's predecessor and those staffs. but it fits in nicely with a more cooperative, a cooperative approach, a student-first approach to learning. So the idea that collaboration and cooperation are critical to student learning, that learning is a social activity, would fit nicely into, you know, if you want to call it the Canadian classroom, because we're a Canadian school, it would certainly fit nicely into kind of the Ontario pedagogy. We would encourage kids to interact with one another to be able to learn, as opposed to being, you know, primarily
in terms of accountability, kids are following the Ontario assessments and kind of government.
So
in terms of your accountability as a head teacher, it's following those kind of processes?
So yes and no. Ontario has a standardized assessment that we don't follow. So there's no requirement for us to follow that. We follow the Ontario curriculum, though, that is an expectations-based curriculum with overall and specific expectations. So teachers design their program around that. When you talk about the idea of accountability, though, that's actually one thing that and struggling isn't the right word, but we're starting to question. So we have a reputation as being a strong school here on SHAPE, but we ask ourselves, well, why? And we want that why to have a defined answer. So, you know, what is it that we do well and how do we know? What are our students learning well and how do we know? And what are they struggling with and how do we know? And at that point, at this point, we wouldn't have a common data set and common language to be able to talk about that beyond our report card and our curriculum.
So I know you're settling in, but beyond the normal settling in yourself and establishing, what do you see as the immediate roadmap or vision for your school currently, or the challenges? Or you still, I appreciate you're still trying to find those out also.
I am, and I think the very first thing for me would have been to try and either establish, reestablish, or I guess, you know, affirm a culture where our staff are comfortable working with each other, where our students, I'll say, are happy to come to school. Because I always think a student who wants to be in school is much more prone to learning. So the broader and early goals are more culture-based than they would be kind of curriculum-based. I also think that one of the most important things we can do as principals, as school leaders, is to sit back and watch what's going on. To come in and say, you know, I think this is what should happen inside this building without actually having been inside the building is arrogant on my part. So I have experts in the building and in the classrooms already. When I take the time to watch and see what it is that they're doing.
Could I, if we walked down the corridor and we popped into the Canadian classrooms, could you give listeners kind of like the kind of top three or four key things that you would be proud of sharing or signposting to people that they see in your classrooms today?
Sure. So I think one of the things that they would see would be a lot of rich discussion and talk. So they wouldn't, they would rarely see or hear quiet. There would be busyness. I'm reluctant to use the word engagement because I think engagement comes with kind of judgment, but they would definitely see students interacting with one another, interacting with teachers. They would see pretty frequent use of technology to support learning. They would, especially in our early grades, see and hear rich mathematical language. They'd hear students talking about their mathematical thinking. They would, they'd hear French and English being used in every classroom. We have three French classrooms and three English classrooms, but you would actually hear both languages being used in both. So if I was going to recap, I they would hear both languages. They would hear a lot of student discussion and talk. So they wouldn't hear silence. So, you know, you asked, well, what would they hear and see? And I told you what they wouldn't hear. They would see an effective use of technology. So technology to support and I'll even say enhance and accelerate student learning. So
What would you, how would you describe what, if the we talked about teacher challenges in your school, what would you say the teacher's day-to-day challenges are?
Day-to-day. The challenges are probably broader than day to day. I would think one of the biggest challenges for us is the transient nature of our core student population and the transient nature of our teacher population. So teachers come here on a two-year contract mm-hmm. with the possibility of a two-year reapplication, which means the longest a teacher is here for is 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a real grasp, I think, on kind of a start to finish in what is really a finite amount of time. That would probably be mm-hmm. a bigger picture challenge, a smaller picture challenge.
Well, the students also, they can be here for maybe 2-3 years also.
Correct. So we do have some students who are here longer, but the bulk of the population we would be looking to support, which would be our purpose, which is to mm-hmm. support the families of Canadian military, are not typically posted for longer than 4 years, 2- and 3-year postings being mm-hmm. the more typical. So you've got students who already have a transient nature to their lives due to the work of either, you know, mom or dad, who we know are not going to be with us from the start of their first grade to the end of their eighth grade, because we have an 8-year grade range. Okay. And the other thing I would add, although our classes are small, all of our classes are multi-grade classes. So our primary class is actually grade 1, 2, and 3 in the same classroom. Right. Middle is grade 4, 5, and our last ones are grade 6, 7, and 8, again, all in the same classroom. So teachers are planning curriculum
is
in three different grades.
A choice on your own part, or is that typical in a Canadian classroom?
Well, it's not typical in a Canadian classroom. It would result in the fact that we only have 78 students, and we have 6 classroom teaching staff and 1 support staff. Sure. So we would be building classes based on the number of students.
There's a school I've been to in Wales that only has 350 students, but they have from year 4, so mm-hmm. 5 years old, up to 16. And to make the school curriculum viable and ensure that teachers have a full-time timetable, they double up the classes in some respects.
Yeah, and those doubled classes, we would call them combined or split classes in Ontario, and they're common. I don't know the specific percentage. At one point in time, I believe it was probably 35 or 40% of classes would have had more than 1 grade. Having 3 grades in 1 class, though, mm-hmm. that would be rare. That's okay. That's not common for Ontario classrooms. But having 2 grades, that would be
and
relatively
common. I would imagine there's lots of benefits for the child, but mm-hmm. for the teacher, the obvious workload pressures. But mm-hmm. what are the benefits for a teacher of having different ages in the classroom?
You kind of have different ages and abilities regardless of a classroom. I think of a typical, year 4 classroom or grade mm-hmm. 4 classroom. You can have students who may be working at the same spot as somebody who'd be in year 2 and others in year 6 or 7. Sure. So that ability range is going to be broad, mm-hmm. whether there's 1 grade or 2. Having different age students, benefits from a teacher – to be honest with you, I don't know.
Something to explore. In the real world, we're all different ages here, right? We're all learning from each other. I know cognitively at a younger age, your abilities are perhaps narrower, and I guess as a teacher, it's easier to support students of the same ability. But I think the mention of collaboration and mm-hmm. problem solving together and older students helping younger ones, or perhaps even younger being a bit more able in another aspect of school life that helps an older student.
And I guess, I would probably say I would have seen that more as a student benefit, because then you've got the younger student has the benefit of mm-hmm. the help of an older student. Is that a teacher benefit or not? Okay. I don't know, because in his absence, you would only have 1 grade to focus on.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of being a principal?
I mean, other than getting to work with Jens here, really, I find being inside classrooms on a daily basis and getting to watch the incredible work that teachers do, I find it humbling, but I probably find it the most rewarding part of my job.
Okay.
I know that inspiration is one of the eyes, and going back to the UK school, because I know that was your purpose of coming here. And I got inspired by the amount of time that Jens, the headmaster here at the UK school, spends inside classrooms mm-hmm. to the point that now that I'm – not that I'm done my watching. I've been here 5 months, but I've started to offer up my time to do some co-teaching with some of our staff as well.
Okay.
That's going to start. But I've actually – it's really – and I've always found that at every school I've worked in, the favorite part of my job was going into classrooms, watching what was happening and interacting with the students. So, you know, I can remember mentoring like vice principals coming in and, you know, they'd say, well, I've always heard that, you know, there's so much administration. I don't want to go into and become a principal because there's so much paperwork. And I reminded them, well, you're also in charge of the building. So you, in some ways, get to determine what your interaction looks like. So if you, you know, I always say, you want to feel good, go into an FS1 or an FS2 or, you know, go into a young classroom and you walk in almost, you know, feeling like a superstar, you feel much better. And then, you know, you go and interact with kids. Like I think the energy and the joy that I get from this job is really inside.
Okay. Last question, before I kind of up the pace, give me...
this isn't a fast
one. No, this isn't the fast one at all. The next year ahead, what are your immediate priorities?
Immediate priority would be transitioning. We have new teachers coming in. Mm-hmm. So we have two new staff that would be coming in. That, when you have only seven teaching staff on there, is a pretty significant portion. So it would be to try and to keep that culture of collaboration going, even with a change in staff. Mm-hmm. From a programming perspective, we've been exploring the idea of a genius hour. So the idea of students selected, I don't want to call it project-based because that right away kind of brings up a connotation, but a deeper exploration in a narrower topic that a student selected. We've just terminated kind of our first look at that, and I think we've done a really good job of its implementation. Our next step is to see, what does student selected learning tell us about student learning itself? So we know they're enjoying what they're doing, but if we were going to ask them the question, what are you learning? How would they answer that?
Okay.
So we're noticing that students are good at telling us what they do, and what they learn is something they still struggle with. So we would probably look at going a little bit deeper in that. And then our second focus will be around, you know, I'll call it mathematical literacy. Mm-hmm. So really trying to deepen our understanding of mathematics as opposed to computation. So, you know, how do we look at mathematical reasoning? How do we look at spatial and visual?
So lots going on.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff.
All right, so we've passed the 20-minute barrier. So here's your quick fire. So no pauses and hesitations, if possible. So what project are you working on today?
Project today?
Yes. Yeah, so what's on your desk in your office?
Updating our school website.
Okay. What book are you reading?
How to Be the Math Teacher You Wish You'd Had.
Okay. What do you do to relax?
Play music.
Okay. Who looks after you as a head teacher?
My wife.
Okay. Piece of advice for someone wanting to become a principal?
Oh, I would watch other principals, and I would also say, think it's the best job in the building.
Okay. Anyone listening that's considering moving to Ontario to work as a teacher, what would be your piece of advice?
Oh, well, this is a hard... can I give...
Sure.
This would be a longer answer. Ontario is a challenging place for teachers right now. My heart goes out to teachers right now. Mm-hmm. They've got a pretty big battle on their hands with the current government around funding issues. They're currently in labor negotiations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I'm in a management role, but I feel for teachers in Ontario. Mm-hmm. I think Ontario and, you know, international testing would solidify that we have an incredible education program. And I think we're really good at eating ourselves up on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I would say to people, you know, if you've got a passion for learning, Ontario is a great place to be, has a really, really strong curriculum, and has a strong school system. And it just doesn't look that way right now from people looking on the outside.
So think twice, but a great opportunity. I mean, I guess the landscape and the places to visit also.
Yeah, but it would be also one of those, you know, this too shall pass kind of moments as well. I think when things are going exceptionally well in Ontario, it is a great place.
Views on Prince Harry and Meghan Markle leaving the UK to live in Canada?
Well, so, of course, isn't that what everybody wants to do at some point in time? They're welcome with open arms.
Okay. If you weren't a principal, what would be your dream job? Because I know you're living it right now.
Oh, if I wasn't a principal, my dream job?
Yeah.
I'd be a long-haired rock and roll musician.
Okay. And so what's your instrument?
I play the keyboards.
Okay. Who would you interview? Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh, wow. Good question. educational perspective?
Anyone, yeah, but preferably education. Yeah.
My suggestion would be Sunil Singh. Sunil Singh is a mathematical teacher who actually is going to work with both of our schools next month.
Okay.
Has some fascinating ideas on how math should be taught. And I wouldn't want to steal his thunder. I think believes that we actually need a complete revamping of what maths education looks like.
Okay. I follow Bobby Siegel, who's a mathematician, kind of TV celebrity teacher back in the UK. And he's got some great ideas about the perceptions of maths. And well, if I struggled as maths as a dad, and then I tell my son and I fuel those myths. And I think that's a good starting point for many, many of us. Where can listeners find out more about you? You know, connect online, Twitter, blogs, those types of things.
Sure. I have a relatively inactive website at this point in time. So it's basically peterjleblanc.com. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at LeBlanc Peter. You can check out my TEDx talk, which, you know, I was always hoping I would get 1 million viewers. And I think I'm at 999,000 away from that goal. So, yeah, lots of places. Instagram, same thing. Okay. Like, I'm pretty active on
top tips for those that do a TED talk for the first time. What would you recommend?
Oh, do it. But practice, think it out well, and don't be intimidated by the red dot.
Okay, when's your next gig with your keyboard publicly?
February 14th, a couple of weeks away.
Okay, great. Now, final question. What would you want to be your legacy, kind of epitaph, gravestone type thing from an educational perspective?
I would probably want it to say something along the lines of touch the lives of many children.
Fantastic. Peter, thank you for your time. I hope I can pop into one or two classrooms before I leave this afternoon. Yeah, it's been great to connect with you. And again, thanks for listening and thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.